This is actually a question that I think I probably get more often than any other question throughout the year. And you'll say, really? How can you say such a thing? And what I find fascinating about this question is that it is actually not even a halachic question. There are no sources about it. It's not even a shaila, but it's something that so many people ask. And the question is, I'm pregnant, and a relative of mine passed away. Am I allowed to attend the funeral or not? This is a question that I get. I cannot tell you how many times a year. Unfortunately, there are many levayas. Fortunately, there are many young women who are pregnant, and they are faced with this question, whether or not they're allowed to participate or be present at a levaya. And I find the question very interesting, because the Minchas Yitzchak has this suffix. He raises this question, and he says that many people had asked him the same question as well. And he says, although we know that when you have a minhag, even if it's something that we don't really know the source, we should try to keep it, and writes the Minchas Yitzchak that he quotes something from the Rajba, that even if you have a bunch of elderly women in the generation who feel that they have some kind of tradition, but nobody else knows about it other than them, and they say, no, this is the way it is, this is the way we always did it, still, says the Rajba, we should try to follow it, but says the Minchas Yitzchak over here, when it comes to this issue, lo matza shum makar, I cannot find any source to explain why there should be any problem with doing this. And that is what I tell women all the time, that there is no problem at all for them to attend a funeral. This is not a halachic question. Maybe I'll pee Kabbalah, there are other ideas, but in terms of the halacha itself, there is no objection at all. What is a question, and is often not asked, is something that really is a major debate and a major discussion among the Achronim. And that question is, what if that woman who happens to be asking this question happens to be an Eishes Kohen? What happens if she's married to a Kohen and she is pregnant? And now she wants to know whether or not she's allowed to participate in a funeral at a time when she is pregnant. Now, what is that question all about? And that actually is very heavily debated in the Achronim. And it's a very rich discussion, a very interesting one. So we know the Torah has many different discussions about various forms of Tumah, most of which we do not observe today. And that we all know that we don't observe Tumah Tahara today. However, one which is certainly continues to be relevant, one which continues to be applicable today, is the issue of Tumas Kohanim. Now, what exactly is the issue of Tumas Kohanim? The Torah says in Parshas Amor, Lenefesh lo yitama be'amav. A Kohen is not allowed to defile himself by coming in contact with a dead body. Except for, the Pasuk says, the seven closest relatives, La'aviv, Uli'imo, La'achiv, La'achoso. We know that there are seven close relatives where a Kohen not only is allowed to, but has an obligation to be mitame himself to those relatives, but outside of that, we know that a Kohen is supposed to abstain from coming in contact with Tumah. Now, when we talk about Tumah, there are two different categories, two different components to how one can become tame. How does one come in contact with a dead body? The most simple way to say it is Tumas Maga, which means I handle a body. I'm actually the one who's touching it in some way. I come in contact very directly, very physically with the body, and that is considered, obviously, a very direct Tumah that is going to be relayed to the Kohen. However, the Torah says that there is a second kind of Tumah, and that is what we refer to as not Tumas Maga, but rather Tumas Ohel. Tumas Ohel means, the Pasuk says, Zos HaTorah Adam Ki Yamos BaOhel. If I have somebody who is under the same roof as a dead body, so in turn, that person then becomes Tameh as well. And that is what we refer to as Tumas Ohel. So even though I can be very far away and at a great distance from the corpse, that will not save me from becoming tummy. So long as we are all under the same roof, so long as we are all under the same kind of covering, that would be something that would bring the tumah from one end to the other. So say, for example, I have a gazebo, and there are no sides, and it just has a roof on top of it, and there's a corpse on one end, and you have a person who's on the other end of it. Even though there are no sides at all, we're not inside of a house, but since we have a roof that covers both the dead body as well as the individual who is alive, that person will then become tummy. Now, when I was actually talking to my children about this question, they asked me, what do I speak about? So I told them what the shayla was going to be tonight. They thought it was interesting. But my son asked me a very good question, and that is, why are you worried about it? Everybody's tummy today. So why does a Kohen have to worry at all about tumah? And that is actually a very, very fundamental, very important question that really boils down to a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. So the Rambam is of the opinion, nitma mikodem, even if a Kohen has already previously come in contact with Tumah, either by mistake, or was on purpose, either was a relative of his, whatever it may be, but a Kohen is already finding himself in a state of Tumah. Ve'achar kach nichnas la'ohel, and then after the Kohen already became Tumah for whatever reason, now he comes in contact with a dead body again, Loka, says the Rambam, he will get Malkus af al habia, even if he's coming into the house, coming into the funeral parlor, where he's not going to really add on to the tumah that he has, meaning he's 100% tamei already from before. So what more can he become tamei if he already was tamei before? Says the Rambam, there's a prohibition, lahosif tumah al tumaso, to add in some way to the defilement that he has already from the tumah that he got before, will be something that is prohibited. And the Ravid disagrees, and the Ravid says, what do you mean? If he became 100% tamei already in the past, how can he become more tamei now? There's no such concept as lahosif tuma al tumaso. And the Rambam says that would be something that we refer to as kvar mechulal ve'omed. You said that there's a prohibition of a kohen coming in contact with the tuma, and he already has. He's already mechulal ve'omed. He already is tamei, and that's too late. And therefore, we assume that from that time on, there would be no problem at all. Now, sounds like that could potentially be a tremendous heter. If you have a kohen that knows that he became tamei, however that happened, now he seems to have a free pass to do whatever he wants going forward. He doesn't ever have to worry again. And the answer is, it's not so clear. Why? Because the Achronim are not exactly sure what the Ravid means. Does the Ravid mean to say just limiting this, that he won't get Malkus if he's Mosif Tumal Tumaso? Or he means that there's no prohibition at all. Not just that he won't be punished for it, but that there's no prohibition at all. And that's the big discussion in the Ravid, where it comes down to the point that Rabbi Chil Michel Tukachinsky writes in the Gesher Achaim, which is a very authoritative sefer on Hilchas Avelos. So he writes, Chalila Litzarif Kula Mishitas Aravid. We cannot even take this into consideration. This Ravid is not something that's going to help this discussion at all, and it's something that we have to be very careful about, because we paskin like the Rambam, that there is a prohibition, the Hosif Tuma Al Tumaso. Even if a coin was already Tumah in the past, if he's going to have an additional Tumah now, that will be something that is considered an Isser De'araisa, which leads to a very important and relevant discussion regarding the permissibility, or perhaps not, of a kohen attending medical school. We know that when a person is going for training as a doctor, they need to come in contact with a cadaver. Before they had the invention of virtual anatomy that they have today, it used to be that a doctor went to med school and actually handled a cadaver. And that is a major, major shiloh. What right does a kohen have to attend a medical school if he knows that in doing so, he's going to have to come in contact with a cadaver? Is there a heter at all? Perhaps it's not mutter at all. This is something that is a very rich discussion between the Gedolei HaPoskim in the last generation. Rav Moshe Feinstein and many others have tshuvas where they discuss it, whether or not this would be permissible, or it's something that we have to absolutely say would not be allowed. Now you'll say, what do you mean? But it's life-saving activities. It's pikuach nefesh. So what are you going to tell a kohen? If a kohen sees somebody that has a heart attack and he knows how to do CPR on that person, would you tell the kohen, well, you're not allowed to come in contact with a dead body, so therefore you got to be careful, you shouldn't do CPR? No, of course. When it's pikuach nefesh, the kohen, just like everybody else, should go and try to save a life. However, Rav Moshe argues, this is not called pikuach nefesh. How can you call this pikuach nefesh? Right now, he doesn't have the skills to be a doctor to save a life. So you can't say it's pikuach nefesh because in 10 years from now, then he'll be able to save a life. We don't say that. We would say if there's pikuach nefesh in front of us now, maybe that would be something that we would allow. But to allow something because maybe later he's going to pass all the exams and actually become a doctor, that is not something that we would sanction. That is not something that we would allow. Anyway, very, very interesting discussion. You have to really figure out if a kohen wants to go to medical school, whether or not it's mutter at all. You have to really look into it very carefully. It's a major, major shaila lahalacha. But let's get back to our issue over here. The question that we raised was, would an eishes kohen meuberes, when you have a woman who is married to a kohen and is now pregnant, would she be allowed to go to a cemetery or to attend a levaya, or perhaps not? So my son asked me today as well another question, and that is, well, she's an eishes kohen. She's not a kohenes herself. And even if she was a kohenes, who is prohibited from coming in contact with tuma? Only the male kohanim. A female kohen, a kohenes, has no prohibition at all. So that's a very good question. And the whole issue here is not about her. The issue here is really about the uber. It's about the unborn child that is inside of her. And the question then becomes, would she be allowed to go in? Because if she in fact is pregnant with a male kohen, maybe you would say that you're not allowed to be metame that child. So where does that come from? In Parshas Emor, the Torah says, Emor la kohanim b'nei Aharon ve'amarta aleihem. The Torah says that you should instruct Aaron and his children, ve'amarta aleihem, and you should say to them. What do you mean? You just said, say to Aaron. What does it mean when the Torah repeats, ve'amarta aleihem? So Rashi comments on that, and he says, emar ve'amarta means, lahazir gedolim al haktanim. Not only do the adults have to make sure not to come in contact with a dead body, but also the children have to make sure not to. Now, how are my children going to know not to? Well, obviously we don't expect a young child to know on his own what to do, but emarva amarta means you as the adults have a responsibility. You have a liability to these children. You have to make sure that your children do not violate an aveira either. And therefore the Torah says, when it comes to tumas kohanim, not only do we assume that you're not allowed to have the adult kohanim become tameh, but even the children are not allowed to become tameh either, and that is the responsibility of their parents to make sure that they shield them from becoming tameh and from defiling themselves. Now there's a very interesting shaila that is raised in the Shevet HaLevi, in the Toros HaYoledes also. Toros HaYoledes is a fascinating sefer by Rav Zilberstein. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, all of his sefarim are very interesting, but he has a sefer that he wrote before all these famous ones, which is a sefer all about things that a pregnant woman needs to know. So how many halachas can there possibly be? So he talks about Shabbos, and he talks about nursing and pumping on Shabbos, all these different things, everything that a woman would have to know when getting involved with having a child. And it's a very interesting sefer, and he raises the following issue. If you have an Eishes Kohen who is pregnant, would we tell that woman that she's not allowed to go and give birth in the hospital? Maybe she has to have a private doctor who's hired to come to the house to deliver the child, or maybe she has to go to a birthing center. Why? Because we know in the hospitals there are always going to be dead bodies. Not always, but very often there are going to be dead bodies. And maybe if she gives birth to a boy after that child is going to be born, he's then going to be cared for in a hospital, which is not where he belongs. You're going to actively be metameh him. So that is the question that he raises. Now, obviously, he says, if it's dangerous in any way, if it's unhealthy, if it's hazardous for them to do this, a home birth, or to do it in a birthing center, and you don't have all the equipment that you otherwise would have in a hospital, then, of course, that is not something that we would allow. But the question is, of all things being equal, and I don't know enough to know whether or not they are equal, I'm going to get hounded by people online who are listening to this, who are going to say, well, you don't know. Yes, I don't know. I have no idea. But let's say, for argument's sake, that all factors would be equal in terms of the health hazards, having a child in the hospital or having a child somewhere else, would that be something that we would say needs to be done? Well, let's say that a hospital probably is the most safe place to be. If something goes wrong, there's no greater place to be in a hospital, I would imagine. So then Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach takes it a step further. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, well, here's the issue. A woman gives birth to a young boy in the hospital, and he happens to now be a Kohen, because his father was a Kohen, so now that he's born, he becomes a Kohen. And he says, every time you open the door to the room, you open and close the door to the room of the hospital, you are being metame that child. So maybe you can't just have visitors walking in and out of the room. You can't just call for a nurse just for fun. Obviously, if the mother needs help, the child needs help, so you call for a nurse. But stam to have visitors come in and out, and every time you open and close the door, you're going to be metame the child, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, this is a very serious shaila. And therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman says,
every time you open and close the door to the patient's room, you're metame from the hallway to the room?
Yes. So if you seal off the door, we have a concept that even if you're in the same building, but if it's sealed off, then the tumah does not go through. So if you have a door that's closed, that's shut,
so
then the tumah would not go. There's a dead body somewhere in this hospital, right? So the question then becomes, how far does it travel?
Which is behind the closed door.
It's behind, what do you mean? At some point, they're going to take that body out of the room, wheel it through the hallways, going to go up the elevators, whatever it is, right? So there's an assumption that the hospitals have tumah floating around. Now, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, we shouldn't endanger the woman or the child, so we should have the birth in the hospital. Makes sense. However, writes Rav Shlomo Zalman, the woman should say that when she's feeling better. What he writes is, Yesh la kachas esatino kabaisa, ka'avur asrim ve'arba shos. After 24 hours, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, a woman should really go home with the child because she shouldn't continue to be metamehim. Now, that's what they do today anyway. They kick you out before 24 hours. It used to be that a woman gave birth, she sat around in the hospital for a couple of days, but that's not the case anymore. Why? I don't know. Now they say it's COVID everything. What?
Money,
insurance, whatever it is. But a woman really doesn't have that long in the hospital regardless. But here, this is just something interesting to think about. And the Nishmas Avram talks about it as well. Again, highlighting the fact, let us not endanger the woman or the child. Let us not be too quick to do anything that's not healthy for them. But all things being equal, he says, a woman who gives birth to a male Kohen should really try her best to take that child out of the hospital as soon as possible as not to be metameim. Let me just get to this point. So now, what's the issue with a woman who is a mu'uberis? We spoke about a woman who gives birth. What about when she's pregnant? So the Shach in Yeridea writes a very interesting line where he says, Eishes Kohen mu'uberis, if I have a woman who is married to a Kohen, and now she is pregnant. Muteres likanes ba'ol ames. She is allowed to attend the funeral. Why is she allowed to attend the funeral? A woman who's pregnant and she's married to a kohen means she's pregnant with the child of a kohen. So why is she allowed to attend the funeral? So he says, the svek sveko. We have a double suffix. What's the double suffix? Number one, he says, shema nefelhu. Maybe it's a stillborn. Number two, he says, shema nekeva. Maybe it's a female. So for both reasons, you don't have to be concerned. Number one, maybe the child is not going to be a bar kayama. Maybe the child is not going to live. And obviously, there's no prohibition to defile a Kohen who's not alive. That's not a problem. And number two, even if the child is going to live, maybe it is a girl and not a boy, and therefore we don't have to be concerned. Now, the implication of that statement is the following. Implication is that maybe that was the case in the days of the Shach. But now that we have technology like an ultrasound that can allow us to know whether this is a boy or a girl, so maybe we no longer have the svek sveka. If the reason why you're allowed to go to such a funeral is because we rely on a svek sveka, number one, maybe the child is not going to live, and number two, maybe it's just a girl and not a boy, if that's the case, then today that shouldn't be relevant. Why? Because we've knocked out, we've eliminated one of the factors. Because after all, we know whether it is a boy or a girl in fact. That is question number one. Question number two to think about is, the Gilyon Maharsha writes there in Shulchan Aruch that he's not so fond of the first argument either. After all, he says, what are you telling me? Maybe this child is going to be a stillborn? Unfortunately, we know every so often you have the tragic situation when a woman doesn't carry a pregnancy through the end, and there's a complication in the end, and the child doesn't make it. But that's not the norm. I don't know what the numbers are, but it's certainly more than Rove. Certainly most of the time, a woman gives birth, even if there is a complication, the child is going to live. It's very rare that a child, I don't know how rare, but it's not something that is so common that a woman is going to lose a child at the end of the pregnancy, and the child is not going to be a bar kayama. That seems to be a very, very far-fetched possibility. And the way he phrases it is, Rov nashim is man hazeh, einon mapilos. Maybe we have better medications today. Maybe we have better medical intervention. Most women don't die in the childbirth. Most children don't die at childbirth. And therefore, he says, both of these factors are out the window. Number one, we don't have a suffix any longer whether it's a boy or a girl. We know nowadays with certainty whether it's a male or female. And number two, we're not sure that this whole argument of Rove, of maybe the child is going to be a stillborn, that's really not so relevant either, because how often does that happen? And therefore, he argues about the whole calculation that is made here. So, that is a major issue. You had a question in the back?
Yeah, isn't Tumas Kohanim Yisrael Del Raisa?
Yeah.
So, there is a suffix, you go to Chumrah anyway.
But not when there's a svek sveka. Not when there's a double suffix, so then we have a right to be makel. Yeah, question? Oh, so 1 second. So question number one is, the whole argument that we're making may not really carry any weight today. Number one, because the whole heter we said for a woman who's pregnant to go to such a cemetery or a levaya is, number one, maybe it's going to be a stillborn. Number two, maybe she's pregnant with a girl. But nowadays, we can eliminate both of those. Number one, it's probably not going to be a stillborn. Number two, we know with certainty that it's going to be a boy. So what is it? So what's the heter b'zman hazeh? So the answer is as follows. The Pisrei Tshuva quotes from the Magen Avram, where he says that this whole discussion is really not correct at all from the outset, because we have a halachic concept that we refer to as Tuma Belua. Tuma Belua means, the Gemara says in Maseches Chulin, if let's say I swallow something, so say for example, person swallows a ring. The Gemara gives this example. Strange case, talks about somebody who swallows a ring, and now the ring is inside of their digestive system, somewhere inside of their body. And now that person walks into a room that is tummy, walks into a funeral. Would the ring inside of their stomach, inside of their abdomen, something, would that ring then become tummy as well? At some point it's going to come out, right? So that ring, is that considered to be tummy when it comes out, or do you say it's tahor? The Gemara says we refer to it as tuma balua. It's completely absorbed, it's completely ingested in the person, it's swallowed up inside of them, and it's lost its identity. And it's not going to become tummy because it's as if it doesn't exist anymore. Once it was swallowed by a person, it no longer keeps its own identity, and we assume even if the person becomes tummy, that ring is not part of the person and it's not part of itself anymore, and therefore we assume it's as if it's not here. So much so, the Gemara says, what if somebody swallows two rings? One ring is tar, one ring is tummy, and now together they're floating around inside of the person's body. Would one tummy ring be mitame the other or not?
Yeah.
I would have said, what would I have said?
Yes.
Why?
Because
they're touching each other, I assume, right? They met up with each other, they're going on a date, whatever they're doing, they're spending some time together. But writes the Gemara, no, that is not metame. And the stipler explains, you see from there that once something is inside, once it's swallowed up, it's no longer considered to be an entity at all. And therefore, even if you have two rings, we assume that they're not metame each other because they have no identity, they are not considered to be here any longer. And therefore, as a result of that, the Magen Avraham says, when you have a child, when you have an uber inside of its mother, inside of the womb, why don't you say the same thing? It's tahara balua, it's tuma balua, it's inside of a casing, it's inside of its mother, and therefore the same way that a ring is not considered to be as if it is here and present and holding its own identity, so too an unborn child should follow the same set of rules, and we should assume that that could not be a problem at all. And that is what he writes. So what was the Shach talking about? You think the Shach forgot about this Gemara Maseches Chulin of Tuma Balua, Tahara Balua? Of course not. The Shach understood the Gemara. So what was the Shach saying? So the Radvaz explains, maybe what the Shach meant when he wrote, the reason why a woman's allowed to go to a cemetery is because, number one, maybe a stillborn, maybe two, number two, maybe a girl, maybe a boy. What was the Shach referring to there? The Shach was saying, when you have a woman who's in labor, in her ninth month, she's about to have a baby. So then you would tell the woman, don't go because we're concerned that maybe you're going to give birth at the funeral. Now, that's probably a good idea anyway. You shouldn't show up to a funeral when you're in labor. You should probably go to the hospital. But either way, the Radvaz explains that that is what the Shach is referring to. That suffix. And there he says, if a woman still wants to go to the funeral even in her ninth month, so then maybe we'll say the heter is based on the stillborn, and the heter is based on maybe it's a zacher, maybe in a keva. But outside of that, we don't need a heter at all. If a woman's in the middle of her pregnancy, we don't have to be concerned at all, says the Magen Avraham, because we have this concept of Tahara Balua and Tuma Balua. And the truth is that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in a tshuva, he says, we know the Torah says that when a woman or a man loses a relative, they're supposed to be metapel with the kvura. So he says, nowhere in the poskim do you have a dispensation. If you have a pregnant woman who's married to a kohen, maybe she shouldn't attend her father's funeral. You ever heard of such a thing? No. Why do you never hear such a thing, says Rav Shlomo Zalman? Wouldn't that make sense? We know that everybody tries to attend their parents' funerals. That's the kavod ames, that's the kavod kibud av ha'em, that's what children are supposed to do. So what are you going to say? We're going to make a new provision now, that if the woman is pregnant and she happens to be married to a kohen, sorry, you can't attend your parents' funerals. It's insanity, says Rav Shlomo Zalman. Nobody's ever suggested such a thing. Why? The reason why is because, really, this whole argument doesn't make any sense in the first place. That's what he argues, and he says, we don't accept it, la halacha, and we assume that it was mutter in the first place, there's nothing to be concerned about. And it seems that most of the Gedolei Achronim assume that this is heter gamur. That is what the Chachmas Adam writes. That is what the Mishneh Berurah seems to say. I discussed this with Rav Asher Weiss in the past. He feels also we have a right to be mekel. And it actually came up. I remember I had a friend who, a very tragic situation. His wife actually felt that the baby in the middle of the ninth month stopped moving. And she went for an appointment by the doctor because she was very concerned. And the doctor said, yes, in fact, the baby is unfortunately no longer alive. The baby's heart stopped beating. And they had to schedule a DNC. And sometimes when you do a DNC, it's not able to be scheduled immediately that day. They have to wait 2 or 3 days until the technicians are available, whatever it may have been. So this woman now had to come home, and she had to live with an unborn dead child inside of her for 2 or 3 days. And it was a terribly uncomfortable, very traumatic situation for them as a couple. I remember it very very vividly. I was actually a chavrusa of this young man. And when his wife was going through this, it was a terrible, terrible time. And at the time, I remember he was worried about this. He said, we live in an apartment building. It was while we were living in Washington Heights. And he said, we have, let's say, 100 families in the building. 10 of them are Kohanim. It was one of the buildings by YU, so it was all young couples. Everyone was Jewish. Everyone was frum. And he said, we have a couple of the people in the building who are Kohanim. So now my wife is walking around with a dead body in the building. Do I have to alert all the Kohanim that they have to leave, or does my wife have to go sleep in a hotel for the next 3 nights? And that was a very uncomfortable Shaila. And it really gets down to this. What is the story with this? In the opposite direction, would you say that a pregnant wife of a Kohen who is pregnant with a boy, would that be an issue? If we knew it was a boy, would that be a problem? Or do you say that there's Tuma Balua, there's Tahara Balua, it's inside of a womb, and therefore we don't have to be concerned? And therefore, on the flip side, do we have to be concerned in this direction? Or do you say, no, it's as if it's swallowed up inside, and therefore we don't have to worry about it at all? Which then leads us to another question, which we don't have time to discuss. Right? We're over time. Yeah, that question is, the Gemara does talk about, what do you do when you have a situation when an Isha Mu'uberes wants to be Megayer? You have a non-Jewish woman who wants to become a Gioris. So she has to go into the mikveh. What happens with the child? Does the child then have to do a geirus if she's pregnant? Does the child have to do a geirus when he is born? Or do you say no? Whatever the mother did works for the child. What's the halacha? So the Gemara says in Maseches Yevamos that whatever the mother did works for the child. Why does it work? The Gemara has a whole discussion why it should work. But that's for another time, maybe for another shiur when I come back. But that is a very, very interesting suffix, and that should seemingly have something to do with this. Do you say that that unborn child is a separate entity? Is that unborn child part of the mother? Is it different from the mother? And if so, how does that shed light on our discussion here? Or perhaps it doesn't. Maybe it's two totally different discussions, and they have nothing to do with each other at all. Anyway, very interesting thing to discuss, but we don't have time. Amir Tashem, we will...